What's going on, everybody? Daryl Frater, the club CEO here, and we have another amazing episode of the My DJ Story podcast brought to you by The Club, the number one live streaming app for DJs and partygoers. Today, we have my brother, DJ Jimmy Jim. Brother, can you please introduce yourself, tell the people who you are and where you're from?
I'm Jim Ballard. I'm from Des Moines, Iowa. I go by DJ Jimmy Jim.
Awesome, man. We're super excited to have you on the My DJ Story podcast. We're here to listen to your story in the DJ industry and for you to share, you know, what kind of got you started as a DJ, and tell us a little bit about the early days in your journey.
Sure. It's a long story, obviously, as you can tell. I'm not a young DJ. So, you know, in high school, I used to do, this was back when people didn't have the equipment they have today. This was like drag in some 8-tracks. And I was kind of the guy that played the music for the after football game kind of stuff, things like that. I went to college and got into radio at the college. I managed the radio station my senior year. I was a program director my junior year. And I was an IT major. Back when I graduated in IT, you had to have experience to get jobs, which nobody today would believe that to be the case. So I fell back on my DJ stuff to work in some clubs at night while I interviewed during the day. And I just kind of thought once I got that full-time IT job that the DJing stuff would just kind of fall to the side. Well, I retired from my IT job 10 years ago, and I'm still doing the clubs for college kids three nights a week right now, actually, during the school year. So that's kind of how that's the Reader's Digest or the elevator version of my story to get from 1977, where I first started in a club that was massive. I mean, back then the clubs were huge. It was a 24,000 square foot club with multiple rooms, and the DJ room was 10,000 square feet. And kids today would probably not, unless they're in a really big area, but we had a lighted dance floor. This was Saturday Night Fever era, right? The dance floor was 24 feet by 48 feet. Today there's clubs that aren't that big sometimes. And so when that's empty and the lights are going, you really got work to do. So.
Awesome. That's an amazing intro, man. I read your bio, but our viewers do not know your bio. So talk to us about some of the highlights of your career throughout this journey, because you've been in the game for some time and you've done some amazing things. So I'd love for you to kind of go over some of the things that you've done.
Yeah. So right away, I started, like I said, in this huge club. I had a four night residency. I was working Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and still working 5 days a week at an IT job. And that was massive fun. I mean, our Saturday nights were like 2,500 people. And now the clubs are not like that. So it's a big, big change for me personally. When I started in the clubs, the first setup we had was what I call radio station turntables. In other words, there was no pitch adjustment. So you had to do things that today people see commonplace, like wordplay and things like that, to make switches and to do segues, because you didn't have the ability to beat match really unless two tracks were identical in nature. Plus everything was a live drummer. So mixing fixed pitch tables with live drummers was not something you really wanted to do. That was not a pleasant sound if you tried to do that and got off. Eventually got myself some 1200s. I'll tell you a quick story about 1200s. So I had not used, I got some 1800s, which is a similar one, and they're in a belt drive version of that. So belt drives, of course, you're like rubber band starts. I went into this kind of a half price store, actually, just on a whim. I was in the neighborhood and just stopped in because I had some extra time. And I look up on the shelf and there's what looks to be a 1200. And I asked the guy if I could see it, and he puts it and he sets it down in front of me, and it's like, I picked it up, you know, it's like, could it be a fake? This is like 1984, 85. And it's like, it appeared to be the real thing, and my heart's like racing. And I asked the guy, I said, so do you have another one of these? And he's like, why, is there something wrong with that one? It's obviously they had no clue what they were working with. And he goes in the back room and he comes out, they had one still in the box. They were half price. I paid $350 for a pair of 1200s. I walked out of there like, so anyway, that was my first club experience at the Joker, 24,000. That was a 5-year residency. Then I did a lot of private events for a few years, for the most part, got into a mobile business with another guy, did a lot of mobile stuff, wanted to get back into the clubs, did another residency. I got involved with our local radio station where I did a mix show. So Saturday night I did three live half hour mix. Well, I didn't record them, but live to tape. They played them back on Saturday nights when I was usually working someplace else. And then I did individual edits that they would play during the week to in a top 40 station. We all know how often things get repeated. So the DJs would have an opportunity to play either the regular cut in their rotation, or they could play my edit of that. So I was getting edits played throughout the day and getting publicity and stuff. Then in the mid 90s, I was in another couple residencies. Early 2000s, I hadn't played a lot. This is 2000, hadn't played a lot because I'd gotten married in 96. And so it started settling down a little bit. And a friend of mine from Minneapolis calls up out of the blue and knew about this job in Des Moines, wanted to know if I was interested. So I went and auditioned, and the people saw me come in, the young workers saw me come in and told the owner, like, what do you think? Are you crazy? And they were looking for somebody for a Saturday night, kind of a more older demo, not old, but, you know, but I blasted the place. And so they put me on their Thursday night, which was their college night. And I played that college residency for multiple years, and we packed that place. And I had an MC who was crazy as hell, and he would start the night off with games and stuff. And so it turned into quite the party. So I did that for like 4 years. That same guy owned a number of places. So he opened a new club in 03. So I went over, started doing the Friday, Saturday residency at that club with Thursday still at Coconut Joe's, and did that for a few years. Then I went and took over. I was the oldest DJ in his set. And I went over, took over his teen night at another huge club where we would do like 1,200 people on a Saturday night. We were bringing in people from MTV's reality shows for guest spots or whatever. So I have lots of pictures with some of those people that are probably nowhere to be found now. Then I went through a period where I didn't have a lot of residency activity. Then a friend of mine who I'd worked with at Coconut Joe's called me about a gay bar that was looking for somebody, and he wanted me to work one night a week there while I worked one night at this other club in the college area. And he eventually left town, so I took over both nights at the gay club for 4 years or so. And now we're at 2015, and I'm 60 years old, thinking, where do we go from here, right? I mean, so I put the word out, I was available, and a friend of mine who has a club in town started using me two Saturdays a month right away. I mean, like immediately, I didn't have any downtime at all. And then a younger friend of mine who was in radio, went to the same college I did, his wife got transferred to Colorado. So I knew all this in advance. And a Facebook group I'm in of local DJs, they posted that they were looking for somebody to take over this college night. And I knew what it was because I'd talked to the guy who was leaving. So I just responded back to the guy who was in charge of it and said, hey, I know what this job is. I'm interested, but I don't know that I'm a perfect fit. Because, you know, I'd had some feedback before at different times, you know, owners didn't like the old guy in the booth or whatever. You know, they liked what I did, but, you know, they didn't want to see the old guy in the booth. And he said, no, I think you'd be great. So I went over the first week, and I live in Des Moines, Iowa City, is about an hour and 45 minutes away. So I went over the first night, and I'm sure the people that saw me come in, all these college kids, were thinking the same thing, the bar staff, what are we doing? Why is this guy coming here to play? And, you know, ripped it up. And I've been there for, this was my third school year, I think, that we just finished up there. Maybe it was the fourth. I don't know. Time flies. But the last Thursday night was the last Thursday of the school year. And it was the biggest Thursday that club had ever had in the whole time they've been open, ever. So, you know, it's been quite the journey. I've had a lot of fun. I'm still getting to go play lots of places. I primarily now play for college kids and college bars, which is kind of an odd thing if you look at me. That's not where you'd expect me to be. You'd expect me to be at the wedding event or whatever. I rarely book weddings. I just did one for my niece because that's who I do them for. And sometimes during the summer when the college scene's a little slower because they're out of school, I'll do wedding or corporate event stuff during the summer more. And right now I'm working on my bookings for the summer. It looks like there's a place that we're going to probably do brunches on Saturday. So play like 10 to 1 every Saturday for brunch. So I'll probably give you a lot more than you wanted to hear there, but that's a...
No, man, that was perfect, man. Super exciting. I love the way you speak about it. It seems like you're having a lot of fun doing this, and you're going a route that is something that people look at you and they're like, wait, what are you doing here? But you're owning it, man, and you're dominating and building a name and a brand for yourself. So I'm super excited to have you here. You know, at this time, we're going to jump to a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the learning lessons that you learned throughout this journey.
Sure.
And we're back with the My DJ Story podcast. I'm here with my brother, DJ Jimmy Jim. He's been telling us an amazing story about his journey in the DJ game. So, brother, you've been in the game for a long time and you've done a lot of things. You've seen a lot of people. You met a lot of interesting people and celebrities and people in the music industry. You know, talk to me about some of the learning lessons that you've learned, you know, some of the things that, you know, when you were first getting started, you didn't know, but you wish you knew now that you have this knowledge, you know, when you're first getting started.
You know, it's interesting because the very first club I worked at, this guy, Pete Benassi, was the owner. And he's probably about what my age is now. And he had grown up in the Depression and owned clubs, you know, on the underground. And he'd been a boxer in his life. He was just a rough old Italian guy. And he told me, he helped me. I mean, because I was new to the game, obviously. It was not something I grew up in. And not even the bar business itself. And he told me a number of things. One of the first things he told me, which I didn't believe until it actually happened to me one night, he said, your crowd will know your mood, whether you try to hide it or not. He said, if you come into work some night and you're sick, you'll still try and put on your good show or whatever, but the crowd will sense that you're sick and it will be reflected in the energy of the crowd. And I thought, well, that's just silly because, you know, I'll come in and I'll act it, right? I'll fake it out. I'm just going to look like, hey, I'm hyped, whatever. But even though you think you're doing a good job or whatever, you're still sick, right? And the crowd somehow senses that. I mean, I thought the guy was crazy as hell when he gave me that advice. The other thing he told me was, you always have to work the hardest when there's nobody in the club, which seems sort of obvious when you think about it, but a lot of people don't look at it that way because they think, oh, I've got a full club now. I need to really rage on, right? But an idiot almost can make a full club rage. I mean, you know, for a couple hours, you can play hit after hit after hit and get lucky, right? One night. I mean, you can't do that every night after every night because eventually, let's say you're doing the same thing. But he said, when there's only five people in your club, and this one I was in this club that's 10,000 square feet, the room I'm playing is 10,000 square feet. He goes, there might only be five people in here, but you don't know that one of those is the owner of the biggest club in town or the state or whatever, and he's looking to see what you can do. So every night you need to come out, no matter how many people are here, and impress the crowd with what you can do and what you play. And it's like, that's pretty good advice. Once again, a lot of DJs, I think, see five people and you see them sitting down or talking to somebody and not focusing on the job. To me, this is a business, flat out. It's not play, it's not fun, it's business. I'm here to have fun personally. I'm not doing it for the money. I want you to pay me, but I'm not just doing it for the money. But I know you're doing it for the money. The guy who owns that club is doing it for the money. And if he's not making money, I'm not working. I mean, that's just the bottom line. It's just straight up business. So the other thing that a couple different philosophies that I personally have adopted. Number one is I don't, and of course I'm older now, so I don't necessarily bring a group of my friends into the club. But when I was younger and all my friends were in the club, and you know, they may want you to play for them. Never play for your friends. That's not who you're playing for. I mean, you know, hey, you're my boy. Come on, play this, put the song on for us. You know, play this next for us. Like, and that's not how it works. I'm programming for a room full of people, and I'm going to stay focused on that. You guys are probably going to keep coming with me no matter what I play, as long as I'm playing in a club that's full, right? I mean, that's just kind of how that works. And the other thing is I always play to a female crowd, period. I'm not playing to what the guys want to hear, because if the girls are there and the girls are happy, the guys are always going to be there. I mean, if it's a club full of guys, they're not going to be around very long. They're going to start going down the street to find where all the women are at, right? I mean, it's like, but some people fall away from that very easily. So my philosophy of music in terms of the clubs I play now is very much hands up, raging, energy, even the down-tempo numbers, I play them with up-tempo surroundings. Because I want the women to sing every song I'm playing. I mean, because when they're singing every song they're playing, the guys will keep drinking and watching them, and the money's going to flow into the bar, and you're going to do well. So,
I love this advice, man. Super tactical, super spoken with someone with a lot of experience and seen the game and knows the subtle nuances that brings a successful DJ and unsuccessful DJ. And these things are things that you have to worry about when you're in your craft, because it is a business. You know, DJs, you're in the position because you're passionate about it, but the club owner is in it for the business. And like you said, you won't have a job if you're not helping them bring money. So you have to figure out how to play that role in the best capacity that you can. And by knowing the subtle details of how your music affects the income of that venue or of that party or of that event, you really have the power to help or make or break a business. So I really appreciate you sharing this, because here at the club, I'm not a DJ myself. I am a business owner. I'm a technologist. I build businesses. I understand the business aspect of it, and I'm trying to help DJs understand the business aspect of it too. And so the advice you're giving is perfect. And I think that it's needed to be heard so DJs could realize how to establish that business, so that way their money is increasing as they're doing something that they love. And that's how you really have happiness in this world, when you're being fulfilled by the things that you love to do, but it's also giving you the lifestyle that you want in terms of income. So thank you for sharing this advice. It's super helpful for DJs that are either, you know, trying to make it in the industry, just don't know how, and the subtle things that they can do to change their craft and their game to improve. And those that are just really trying to make it and start in the industry, man. Talk to me a little bit about your branding. You know, you have DJ Jimmy Jim as your core name, but I know you go by a few other names. And just talk to me about your branding and how you chose your name, and what does this brand mean to you?
Well, okay, I didn't really choose it. Let's start there. But sometimes things happen. So I did not have any sort of DJ name. It was just me, right? I'm Jim. I mean, back when I first started, there was very few clubs and not, you know, not a ton of DJs, because there really wasn't a lot of opportunities, right? And a bedroom DJing wasn't really a thing. So I pretty much just went by my name. Everybody knew me by Jim. When I got into the radio mix show stuff, then they started calling me locally. I was the mix master, Jim Baller. That's how they branded me on the radio, which, you know, I hope nobody was ever called the mix master before, right? So that really wasn't a name that could stick. It really wasn't until 2000, March of 2000, when I went back into this club called Coconut Joe's, and they, you know, this is a bunch of probably underage kids too, to some extent. I mean, there's 21 drinking age, but there's probably a lot of 19-year-old college kids in there with the fake IDs. And the bar staff was probably all 20 to 25, right? And they wanted to call me Grandpa, you know, because I was older, but they didn't feel that was quite right. So they basically branded me as Uncle Jim. So through the whole phase of when I was working for that owner at Coconut Joe's, at Crush, as at Boom Boom Room, at Vucare, and Energy was the teen club. When I was working for him at all those clubs, that's where the Uncle Jim branding really started. And that kind of stuck. People locally kind of knew me by that. They wouldn't call me Jim. The people from the clubs would see me, they'd say, "Hey, Uncle Jim." When we opened Crush, I was still Uncle Jim, but this guy was kind of a marketing ace. And so he would oftentimes say, "We're having multiple DJs tonight," where there was only, it was me, I was the DJ, right? And he'd advertise, "We're having multiple DJs." So he branded me a second name. So I was Uncle Jim, and he branded me as Jimmy Jim. And so then it kind of, the branding kind of went with the club. So I was really Uncle Jim at the Teen Club Energy, at Coconut Joe's, at Vucare, and at Crush, which was a more upscale club, I was Jimmy Jim. So as I moved on from that owner and the club stuff, it's like locally, that's how people knew me. So rather than try and do something different, I just adopted it. I mean, it seems pretty silly to me now to go in and say, "Hey, it's DJ Jimmy Jim." But I mean, I'm playing these college bars now, and particularly in Ames, where it's Iowa State University, where it's more on the club I work at, it's more right on the street. It's kind of an entertainment area, and I'll be walking into the club, and these college kids are like, "Hey, Jimmy Jim, how you doing?" It's like, you know, it's like, "No, my name is Jim." It's like, but I mean, literally, that's what they call me. And so it's like, okay, I guess I'll live with it. When I hear my high school friends, you know, come in and saw me one time, and they're like, "Jimmy Jim," I'm like, it just sounds so silly to hear from them to say that, but it, you know, but you go where you go, right? I mean, it's how I'm branded, it's how they know me, so now I just use it.
I love it, man. It's a super organic and it's really fitting. The people love it. So why not? That's great, man. Hey, this is exciting, bro. And you're on a journey that is still going on. You know, what can we see from you in the future, and kind of what are some things that people that are listening in our community from the club help and support you with?
Obviously, you know, when last year, when obviously things went down, my Thursday residency, I played March 12th. And then that was gone the rest of the year. It's corporate. Brothers is a corporate gig. They have Brothers Bar and Grills all over the country. And I was down from there until February of this year. Now, my Ames residency, they actually tried to get me back in as much as they could. As soon as the governor would open things up a little bit, we'd be in there. During football season, they had a good football team. And we were closing at 10 o'clock at night. And so there'd be a 3 o'clock football game. So I'd go up and I'd play during commercial breaks for the football game, halftime. And then as soon as the game was over, we'd just roll into the night. Cause now we're talking at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and we're playing till 10 o'clock. Right. So it's like you cram the 9 to 1 time into 6 to 10. So that was really nice. So, I mean, I was able to pick up a lot of time there, but during the summer last year, it was a lot of streaming, a lot of live streaming. And I'd never done that before. So, you know, if I'd like to build anything, it's my Twitch followers, obviously. To begin with, I was doing Facebook for the most part, and we all know what happened there. You know, 10 minutes on and you played one of their artists, that's an instant, and you know, the Facebook feeds shut down just like that. So I went to Twitch, but it was real hard to build a following with Twitch. You know, 'cause I don't have a national brand, obviously. I was getting local people. And even what's really weird is, like, when I went back to Brothers and start working this spring, someone were saying, yeah, we had basically like watch parties, you know, with you live streaming. It's like, I had no clue. I mean, 'cause they weren't engaging with chat or anything else. 'Cause it wasn't like a one-on-one with them. It'd be like a group of 5 or 6 or 7. They probably had the music on in the background. They really weren't watching the feed, but they were just enjoying the music, and they certainly weren't interactive chatting. I've got some friends that I look at and I go, man, they've really built a following with what they're doing with their Twitch channel. But then again, the one friend I have in Canada, that's still all he's doing. He's not playing in the clubs. So, you know, he's really had to do that to build subscriptions and stuff on the live streaming. So I'm looking at right now, whether during the summer, whether I pick up some gigs or whether I go do more live streaming. Because I'm spoiled at this point in time, right? I'm old, I've seen it all. There's lots of opportunities in Des Moines to play smaller venues and more background, almost your music's just filling a void, right? You're not the focus to build a dance floor or anything at some of these places. And I could book them all the time. And I don't know that that's how I want to spend my time, you know, because time's one thing you don't have an unlimited quantity of. And so I really want to, if I'm going to be out doing stuff, I really want to do the bigger, you know, or the more active, interactive kind of things, which is where live streaming falls down, unless you've got a real following, right? If you've got a following, you can have lots of chat activity. I see, you know, people that have that and they can interact. You don't see them, but you know, when they're chatting, that they're engaged in what you're doing. So I don't know if I answered your question or if I just rambled there, but
no, that was good, man. You can catch you on live streaming and Twitch. Yep. And yeah, yep. We'd love to have you on the club as well. We're really doing a great job of building a community of DJs and people that want to watch and enjoy these DJs. So we're creating that space where people go for the DJs and not any other kind of content. That's all we do here. So we're super excited to have DJ Jimmy Jim here. Do you have any other parting advice for DJs out there that are trying to get started before we jump into our lightning round?
You know, the one thing I would say, I guess that I always did when I was moving from one to another and when I'd like be ending a residency or something, I know DJs hate me for this probably, but I would work for free, seriously. And I would work the lights for free to show that I had energy. I had enthusiasm. I had a passion. I had a desire. If they knew I DJ'd, maybe they'd see me or whatever, but they got the guy that's there that they really like, right? But I'd go in, I'd run lights. You know, you don't have a light guy? No, you got some lights. You should have somebody running this show so you get much more energy in the room. And then the first time that guy needs the night off, right? Or he's sick or whatever, they go, hey, can you DJ? Yeah, you step in. Next thing you know, they're like, well, wait, you did a better job than the guy we've got. I've pushed guys out of jobs before by doing that. And it's not popular, but you know what? That's I want the work, right? So, and it's not because I want the money. It's just I want it's the energy of the room. It's the, you know, all that stuff there. The other thing is I don't drink at all anymore. I used to drink some. I never drank a lot. But these DJs that think they're better when they drink or whatever, you're just usually kidding yourself. You're just having a good time that the people in the bar are having that are drunk that think you're doing a great job. But you're really not, you're not as focused as you should be or could be. I played a brand new bar that I'd never been in this last Friday, Saturday, in Cedar Falls, Iowa. And the first thing the girl tells me, she's walking me up to the DJ booth, is we really can't give you a tab. We can give you employee pricing, you know, on the drinks or whatever. I go, that's really okay, because I don't drink. This is a business for me. I'm here to do a job. So I think she was very surprised, because I'm guessing most of the DJs that come in there want to drink. But so,
yeah, great advice, man. And at this time, we're going to jump into the lightning round. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Describe your DJ setup, hardware and software.
I started obviously with vinyl. I still have 15,000 pieces of vinyl. I have some 1200s. Haven't drug them out for a while. When I switched in 2000 to that club, they only had CDs, so I switched to CDs. I kept thinking, I'm an old guy, I'm not going to stay in this. So I didn't switch to a computer. Finally, when I got done at the gay bar residency in 2015, I said, I'm not lugging this stuff around anymore. So I switched. So now I'm on a computer. I use Serato, primarily use a Denon 6000 MK2 controller. People kind of go, what, that's all you got? Then they hear all the things I can do with it. And I'm not the guy that's going to come in and impress you with scratching and all kinds of other stuff. I'm going to play great music. It's going to be well mixed. I've been doing harmonic mixing since early in the 90s. So hardware is a Denon and using a Serato.
Who's your favorite DJ?
You know, I don't know if I have a favorite DJ. You know, I'll tell you that DJ Second Nature, who's a video DJ, I've worked with many times in clubs that I've been working at where he came in and played. And, you know, to me, he was a big name. He used to do remixes for Funky Mix and Ultimix. And, you know, he was a big name DJ to me, but the nicest guy in the world. I mean, gave me remixes. We traded mixes and stuff. I mean, just a great guy.
What has been your favorite party or event you've DJed at, and why?
Well, wow. Well, yeah, that's kind of tough. I mean, because really there's been multiple stages in my career. So early on when I was, you know, in my 20s and I worked at the Joker and I'm playing for 2,500 people, every weekend was a party there. Then in 2000, when I went to Coconut Joe's for the Thursday night residency, that was the second best club I'd ever worked in. I've worked in obviously a lot of clubs. And then getting back into Brothers in Iowa City on Thursday nights, Thursday nights there have been so good. I mean, it's crazy for me. The kids are there taking my picture and, you know, saying I'm just playing music and having a good time with you guys. But so those three clubs are my favorite clubs in the 44 years.
Who's the most interesting person you've met throughout your career as a DJ?
That's a good, you know, that's a tough question, because you could describe what is interesting, right? I've had some interesting experiences with some DJs, some of which I won't name names, but we had a bigger name DJ in our club once who was playing the headline. And the first time he played there, he came in himself for soundcheck, you know. And the second time he came, he never even showed up for soundcheck. He sent his guy in, you know, to do it. And then the guy, I was supposed to open, the guy was supposed to play who came with him, and then he was going to play. I was doing so well, the other guy had never played. We went straight from me to the headliner at like 11:45 or something like that. And then that guy bailed. I mean, the minute the lights were on, he was gone. I mean, I wanted to get a picture with him. The first time I was there, I didn't, because he was gone so fast. So the second time I kind of knew. And I just barely got a picture with him before he left the second time. So it's like, you know, and he's a big name. I mean, I'm not going to say he's not a big name, but it's like, gosh, I mean, you could take 2 seconds to have a picture with me, for Christ's sakes. So that was interesting.
What's one thing that you think is missing from live streaming for DJs?
Well, I mean, I talked about it a little bit before. Obviously, the interaction is a big part, and the engagement. I mean, obviously, with Twitch, if you're not logged in, you can't chat. So lots of people can just watch your channel that are never logged in. So you never have an idea they're watching and they're never engaging. You can't force the engagement, obviously. I mean, they're not captive to you at all. So that's interesting. I mean, so I don't mean to drag you backwards a little bit, but so one of the things we didn't talk about, one of the kind of not a residency, but I was a regular there was, and something different for most people is Silent Disco. I don't know if you're familiar with Silent Disco. That was Hush, the club I worked at. And so you have three DJs playing live all on three different channels, and your goal is to try and keep them engaged on your channel, and their colors on their headphones tell you what they're listening to. So that was a real introduction to, can you keep people? And that's what Twitch is like, right? I mean, because like you play one song that they don't like or aren't engaged in. If they are sort of engaged, it's like back then in the last year, wherever DJ was live streaming, it's like, boom, I'm on another live stream channel because I don't like what you're doing. So, you know, you go back to the early days of DJing, and the DJs would say, oh, we're going to take you on a journey, right? My night is set up. I'm going to play for 4 hours and it's a journey. Today's world, there's no journeys. I mean, I play, you know, Saturday night, I played 10 times where I only played the chorus, probably nothing else on the song, just the chorus. And you're moving on that fast. When I started, every record was, you know, 8-10 minutes long, and you basically played the whole record. I mean, so, you know, the engagement level now is you really have to be very, very quick to keep people engaged.
And shout out to DJs that you know personally, whose stories also need to be shared on this podcast.
Oh, wow. Locally, DJ Brett B, Chris Coffey, DJ Universal, DMS. Those guys are all guys I've worked with. Now I'm just drawing a blank. Taylor G. I can't forget Taylor G. Taylor G is the one who's booking me in Iowa City. I can't forget Taylor G. Confluence, a guy that we work with locally who's doing a lot of his own music. He's actually just signed 3 or 4 tracks that he's producing. So watch for him, Confluence. He does very hard house kind of stuff. Really good. So those are kind of the local guys to watch out for here that I work with a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, we would love to have them on the show. And any DJ that's interested in being on the My DJ Story podcast can sign up at djsignup.com. And brother, where can people find you online or even in person if you're still doing events?
Yeah, well, so I'm back at Brothers again this Saturday night. Usually I do Thursdays, but we're going to try possibly, they don't usually have DJs in Iowa City during the summer because the kids are gone, but we're going to try and experiment a little bit. So I'm going to be back at Brothers this Saturday, the 22nd. We're working a lunch deal where I'm going to probably play Saturday's brunch at a place called Truman's here in town. It'll be outside on their patio. They can find me on Facebook. That's the only one that's a little different. On Facebook, they can find me in the lab with Jimmy Jim. On Instagram, it's at DJ Jimmy Jim. Mixcloud, DJ Jimmy Jim. Twitch, DJ Jimmy Jim. SoundCloud, I think, is actually DJ-Jimmy-Jim. But I mean, if you just Google up DJ Jimmy Jim on those platforms, you'll find me there. So I'm on all of them: SoundCloud, Mixcloud, Instagram, Twitch, Facebook. I think we covered pretty much all. I'm on LinkedIn, but that's more for my professional IT page. But you can find me there as Jim Ballard on that page. So
awesome, man. This was great. I really appreciate you spending time with us today. This has been an amazing interview. You have an amazing story, and I'm glad you're able to share it with our audience. So everyone, please follow my brother, DJ Jimmy Jim, on all the platforms and stay in touch with his journey. He has a lot that he's still going to be doing with his journey. So stay tuned and watch out for him.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on.